From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. State of Belief can be heard across the country weekends on Air America Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. And while you're there, please consider supporting State of Belief and this free podcast service by making a tax-deductible donation to Interfaith Alliance Foundation. We need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. Thank you for listening.
Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone, to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. On today's show, we hope to advance a little religious understanding. From new insight into what it means to be an American Catholic to a holiday message for non-believers. Later in the show, my conversation with Carrie Kennedy, the daughter of the late Robert F. Kennedy. She spoke with over 30 prominent Americans, some conservative, some liberal, some devout, some less so, all Catholic, and each with his or her own unique interpretation of faith. Plus, how do you reach out to people of no faith during the holiday season? A new ad campaign for the godless is launched right here in our nation's capital. You might call it Reasons Greetings. Now, we've got more on that to come, and have I got an evangelical sex story for you? But I'm not even going to tell you any more. Stay tuned. Now, first, a look at religious dialogue in action. This weekend, 50 mosques and 50 synagogues from around the United States and Canada will come together for a weekend of twinning. This is an effort to confront anti-Semitism and Islamophobia by encouraging open and honest conversation between Jews and Muslims. The project is spearheaded by the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding, and I'm joined now by the president of that organization, Rabbi Mark Schneier. Also with me is my friend Dr. Saeed Muhammad Saeed, former Secretary General of the Islamic Society of North America, a group which is lending its support to this weekend-long project. Welcome, both of you, to State of Belief.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
Rabbi Schneier, why call the weekend twinning? What's the significance of that word?
The significance is that as Jews and Muslims, being the children of Abraham, we recognize that not only do we share a common faith, but we share a common fate, and it is our single destiny that must strengthen our bonds of concern, compassion, and caring for each other.
Saeed, if you were speaking directly to the members of a mosque that is participating in this twinning initiative, tell me one or two thoughts that you would share with them going into the weekend.
Well, I mean, it's not just on this occasion. Over decades, we have been talking to them about the bonds between the Abrahamic faith. Over the years, we have been talking to them how critical it is in America for us, in a pluralist democracy, to respect others' religions and then to expect that they will respect us. It's a mutual respect, mutual recognition that's at the heart of American experience. So in our sermons, we have been talking about the original vision of our prophet when he came to Medina, and for the first time after having been persecuted in Mecca, how he brought together under a broad tent Jews and Christians and people of different tribes together. So that's what actually the Islamic vision is, that we can flourish, we can move forward only establishing a better understanding, relationship, and partnership. Ultimately, it is joining together and fighting against the ills and evils of our society, injustices, and problems that we have. We cannot do it alone. We have to do it jointly.
Mark, you've been doing the same thing. You've been, as you've told us, you've been talking to Jewish congregations. What are the major points that you make to a Jewish congregation preparing for this dialogue?
Well, I point out to the fact that we are so proud that the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding and the Islamic Society of North America, as this twinning program is taking place, we have commercials running on CNN, and they're very powerful in terms of the message of rabbis in the commercials speaking out against Islamophobia and imams speaking out against anti-Semitism. And both Dr. Saeed and I and other Jewish and Muslim religious leaders, we understand that a people who fight for their own rights are only as honorable as when they fight for the rights of all people. And I believe it was the great English statesman and philosopher Edmund Burke who once said that all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And I salute these 50 congregations, the synagogues and the 50 mosques, for coming together this weekend, because they are among the good people who are doing something.
One of the things that always gets said to me in talking about these kinds of dialogues, and it comes from skeptics, obviously, pessimists, you all are talking about huge issues here, issues that go back hundreds of years, issues in the Middle East that continue to divide us in the West. How do you think that just talking to each other can accomplish much in the face of these imposing issues? How do you all respond to that?
Well, Reverend Gaddy, it's not just talking, actually. It is developing, establishing partnerships. First and the foremost enemy that is there against cooperation and unity is these stereotypes and piled up different prejudices and different kinds of misrepresentation. So when you have this exchange, when you have partnerships and people are working closely together, it helps to build bridges of understanding. It helps us to build goodwill and that kind of partnership, which is tremendously useful in addressing more serious issues.
Mark, how do you respond to that?
Look, this is an authentic grassroots effort. This isn't about leaders coming together. This is about people. This is about congregations coming together. That's what's so unique, and it's never been done in terms of this magnitude. And I can tell you, and within the Jewish community, you know, what's so extraordinary, that it's a cross-denominational effort, meaning it's Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, and Reconstructionist synagogues that are involved in this initiative. And if we can show the world this paradigm, North America, Europe, and Latin America, then I believe we could have an impact in terms of helping to bring to the fore the voice of religious centrism so that Muslim-Jewish relations can be viewed in a very, very positive light.
My guests today are Dr. Saeed Saeed,
yeah,
former Secretary General of the Islamic Society of North America, and Rabbi Mark Schneier of the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding. And I want to thank both of our guests for what they're doing to bring about mutual understanding among these two religious groups. Saeed, Mark, thanks to both of you for being with us on State of Belief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Welton Gaddy, and coming up on State of Belief, a holiday message for those Americans who might not believe in God. What do those season greetings sound like? Find out when we come back. We'll be right back. Hum a little Christmas music while we're away, and we'll see you in just a minute. Hello again, friends. I'm Welton Getty, and you're listening to State of Belief. And yes, I might agree it is a little bit early for Christmas music, but one group in Washington, D.C. is already getting their message out about the holiday season. And, you know, it might not be what you necessarily expect. The American Humanist Association recently launched a new advertising campaign with posters that began appearing this week on public buses throughout the D.C. area. Taking a line from the song Santa Claus is Coming to Town, the posters read simply, "Why believe in a God? Just be good for goodness sake." It's the first ad campaign of its kind to appear in the United States. And here now to discuss the project with me is Fred Edwards. Fred is the Director of Communications for the American Humanist Association. Fred, welcome to State of Belief.
Well, thank you for having me.
So what is it that you hope the public takes away from these ads?
Well, we're primarily focusing the ads on reaching our own audience, people who either question the idea of belief in a God or people who already don't believe in a God, but who do believe in human values, who believe in ethics, and that's who we're trying to reach. Now, one of the things you have to consider is that when there are, relatively speaking, for the national population, so few of us, sometimes in order for us to reach our audience, everyone in the room has to hear us. And that's kind of what has been the focus of the attention on this, is that to be heard, you sometimes have to speak loudly, but we're really only aiming at our audience.
I want to come back to the ads themselves in just a minute, but I think it would be helpful for our listeners to have some basic background in a fairly succinct way. Tell our audience, what exactly is a humanist?
A humanist is a person who believes that human values come from our nature as human beings, as social animals, that is part of our evolutionary heritage, and then also part of the heritage of human civilization and the trial and error effects of learning how better to live, that's the basis of our values. We don't get them from the God idea. And we believe in responsibility and ethics and personal fulfillment through this kind of philosophy that is naturalistic and ethical.
Now, I'm just surmising this. I don't know it. But my guess is that you all have not received letters of congratulations from Focus on the Family or from the Family Research Council. That would be true, wouldn't it?
Yes. In fact, quite the opposite. They kind of stirred up their audience to make a number of calls. For a few days, a number of people were just calling us steady, and then a lot of letters, emails, and things like that, many of them critical. But what struck us of interest is that the critical calls and emails were from out of state, way out of the area, in fact, and the people actually affected by our ads on the buses have not complained or made a big fuss.
Well, I know you've heard this, and so I want to say it and then have you respond. I'm sure there are people saying, oh, these humanists are just trying to ruin the holiday season for believers. What do you say to that?
My point is that we as humanists enjoy the holidays, too, because we look at the holidays as a nature holiday. It's based on the winter solstice, which actually falls either December 21st and 22nd. But in ancient Roman times, they calculated it wrong, and they celebrated their Saturnalia, or Feast of Saturn, around December 25th, and then when Christianity took over the Roman Empire, they ended up adopting that holiday, made it the Mass of Jesus Christ, and so it got renamed, and the nature of the celebration, it has many of the same elements of the ancient religions that were in place as Christianity spread across Europe. So you have the Yule log and the evergreen tree from Northern Europe, and you have the holly and the mistletoe from the Druids and all that stuff, and all that's fine. And so we humanists, we celebrate it as a secular holiday time, and it belongs to us too.
Fred, is anybody saying thank you?
Yes. In fact, one email here in particular really struck me. This individual wrote, "I treasure that there are other people like me who see the good in other people without the need for a magical sky captain to threaten them with flaming swords and a less than lovely summer place filled with brimstone and eternal hellfire." So that person was a little edgy, but we do get a lot of people who just thanked us and who have contributed money and who have joined the organization and so on. So from our own audience, who we were really aiming at, we've gotten a lot of praise, even from some people in our organization who we thought might be critical because our ad was a little cute and a little edgy, and some of our folks don't like us doing too much of that. But it seems almost everybody's on board with us on this one.
If your staff, if you were sitting around the conference room table right now evaluating this project, would you be encouraged or would you be discouraged by what you've learned?
I would be encouraged because the result has been not only signs on buses, 230 of them in the Washington, D.C. area, but the fact that this has gotten us national coverage, and so that means our message has reached a larger portion of our audience than might have otherwise been reached had we been not edgy at all. And so what it's taught us is that you have to be interesting, you have to be cute and funny, you have to say something a little bit striking, and then people notice you, and then they say, oh, I'm one of those, I'm a humanist, I didn't know I was a humanist, I didn't use the word, but gee, I guess that's what I am. And that's what we've learned from this.
Fred Edwards is the Director of Communications for the American Humanist Association. Now, to see their new ad campaign, you don't have to get on a bus in Washington, D.C., or even stand out on the corner and wait for one to come by. You can just head over to our website, where you can find pictures of the posters now appearing in Washington, D.C., and you will find links to more information on humanism. Fred, thanks so much for being with us on State of Belief.
Thank you for having me, Welton.
You're listening to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. And still to come on today's show, the family that is synonymous with Catholicism and Democratic politics, the Kennedys. We've got my conversation with Carrie Kennedy, daughter of Robert F. Kennedy. That's up next. Welcome back, everyone. This is State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. Roman Catholic bishops from around the country met last week at their semi-annual conference in Baltimore, and at the top of their agenda, the perennial hot-button issue, abortion. The bishops issued a statement which promised to fight President-elect Barack Obama on any efforts to enact new abortion rights legislation. Now, this challenge comes on the heels of an election during which many Catholic clergy warned voters not to cast ballots for pro-choice candidates. Some went so far, in fact, as to say that a vote for Obama could threaten one's salvation. And yet, when Catholics went to the polls, a majority voted for the pro-choice presidential candidate. Now, did the clerical warnings simply fall on deaf ears? Or are some Catholics suggesting that abortion is not the only litmus test for their faith? Can you be a good Catholic and have your own interpretations about life on issues like abortion or stem cell research, marriage or sexuality? Simply put, what does it mean to be a Catholic today? A new book asks that very question. It's entitled Being Catholic Now, and it's written by a woman who's no stranger to Catholicism or to politics, for that matter. Carrie Kennedy is the daughter of Robert and Ethel Kennedy, and she's a human rights activist who has worked on issues like child's rights, women's rights, ethnic violence, and the environment. In the new book, Carrie Kennedy speaks with 37 prominent Americans about what Catholicism means to them. The contributors to the book range from television host Bill O'Reilly to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. Carrie joins me now to talk about what picture of contemporary American Catholicism she gleaned from these very diverse interviews. Carrie, welcome to State of Belief.
Well, it's great to be on. Thank you very much, Walton.
It's evident from the recent statement that Catholic bishops are not going to shy away from getting involved in politics over issues like abortion or stem cell research. Your book presents a very nuanced view of Catholics, some who don't necessarily agree with the institutional church on every subject, including abortion. So is it dangerous for Catholic clergy to be so involved in politics in this way, to be adamant and political on single hot-button issues?
Well, I think your question is asked two different questions. One, is it good for the Catholic Church to be involved in politics? And my answer to that is absolutely. These are political issues that we're dealing with. Questions of right and wrong, questions of U.S. policy, what do we want to do as a society, where do we want to be, what do we want our children to learn? So I think that it's great to be involved and engaged in the life of our country. That's the breath and life of American democracy. We need everyone engaged. So I think that part of it is good. Should they be involved particularly on the abortion issue? Well, sure, fine. Let's hear the bishops on the abortion issue, but let that be the only issue. You know, after Vatican II, the bishops agreed that there should be preferential option for the poor. In other words, any legislation that's passed has to take into account its impact on poor people. And that's the issue that we are not hearing enough about from the Catholic Church, from the bishops of the Catholic Church. It's happening on the ground, but we're not hearing enough about what's going to happen as a result of the mortgage crisis. What are we going to do in the midst of this terrible financial crisis, which is affecting all of us? So I think when they just choose abortion and talk solely about that, that they're kind of dismissed or they're kind of set aside in a way, because it is not the issue that's central to most Catholics today.
I can't help but remember your uncle's ringing comments about, I believe in a nation where the separation of church and state is absolute. Is church-state separation not understood and appreciated? Is that the problem? Or where is this fixation on abortion a prelude to the Catholic Church saying we need to write the laws for your land? What's going on there?
Well, I think, you know, in my experience, the Catholic Church has just really narrowed its focus from on top. I mean, this is not the church per se, but this is particularly the bishops. But they've narrowed the focus so that most Catholics, and particularly most non-Catholics, associate the Catholic Church with abortion, stem cell research, and gay marriage, and that's it. Mm-hmm. They're not associating the Catholic Church with tremendous good that it does. You know, the Catholic Church is the largest provider of social services to the poor in our country, to for education and for health care. It runs more hospitals, clinics, et cetera, than any other organization beside the federal government. And so those are the types of issues that I think are inspiring to Catholics, that Catholics care about and want to be involved in and want to see the church involved in. And I think when the church starts talking about those issues, people start listening and becoming engaged and involved with it again.
Carrie, I was impressed when I read in your book that the Catholicism you said that you grew up with isn't the same Catholicism you teach your children. I've heard my friend Kathleen Kennedy Townsend say much the same thing. How, if you don't mind me asking, how has your faith changed?
Well, I think, you know, just from one generation to the next, when my daughter, Michaela, who's now 11, when she was six, she came home from CCD class, that's Catholic Religious Education class, and she said, "Mama, the teacher can't answer my questions." And I said, "Well, what did you ask, honey?" And she said, "Well, the teacher taught us to say Father, Son, and Holy Ghost." And I raised my hand and I said, "Why are we saying Father? God could be a mother. And why are we saying son? Shouldn't it be child? What difference does it make if he was a boy or a girl?" And now these are questions that did not occur to me. And so I think, you know, the kids are engaged, are interested, want to know, want to understand. But there are things about Catholicism that need explaining. And one of the things I learned in writing this book is that everybody has an argument with the church, and that's part of being Catholic. That's what we're supposed to do. You know, one of the great things that Pope Benedict said when he came to the United States last spring is he said one of the pillars of Catholicism is the search for truth. And of course, if you're searching for the truth, you're going to have questions for the status quo. Yeah. And Peggy Noonan in the book says, God doesn't want us to be intellectual slaves. He wants us to ask these questions. And so I think there's just a wide range of arguments with the church. And as Andrew Sullivan points out in the book, even Jesus had arguments with the Pharisees and the scribes. And the message of the gospel is, if you have all these rules and you don't have love, then you have nothing. Mm-hmm. So throw out the rules, leave them aside, just focus on love. And if you get that, if you can get that straight, then you get the church, you get what Catholicism is all about.
You have an incredibly wide range of people that you interviewed, actors, business people, writers, nuns, priests, even comedian Bill Maher. Who was raised Catholic and is now an avid critic of organized religion. How, Carrie, do you stress the importance of individual interpretation and application without completely losing the authority in religion so that religion, the Catholic religion, is just whatever someone wants it to be?
Yeah, I think that's a good and important question. And first of all, let's understand that there are 6 billion people on Earth, and a billion of them are Catholics. Mm-hmm. So when you consider that there are a billion Catholics out there, you have to understand that there's going to be a wide range of approaches to this faith and to how it's carried out, and that people are going to embrace it from a very orthodox perspective, and other people are going to embrace it and call themselves Catholics who have a very different attitude. One of the people I interviewed in the book, Gay Talese, has said that he hasn't been to Mass for 50 years, and he is a Catholic. Mm-hmm. He, you know, 100% sees himself as a Catholic. So there are a lot of different approaches. I think that the main thing that I would want for the next generation is that they spend some time reading the Bible, that they understand the basics of our faith, and that they walk away really with that essential message that ultimately our faith is about love for God, love for one another.
Carrie, we're almost out of time, but I've got two questions I want to ask just for you, not about someone else. What does it do to you when you are listening to a priest or a bishop who carries the authority of the church, and that person is blasting issues that you hold dear, actions that you value, and the he, and it is always a he, carries the authority, and you're not recognized as someone who has that authority. What does that do to you inside?
Well, you know, it used to make me very, very angry, and for years I left church in a bit of a rage, and it was very unsatisfying, and I saw that, I misperceived that as creating a impediment for my sense of faith and my connection to the Almighty. But now I don't really feel that way anymore. I feel that after writing this book, that we all have arguments with the church, that Tom Monahan, who is building an Orthodox Catholic utopia in Florida, argues with the church. He thinks it's gotten much too lax, and that other people think that the church is far too Orthodox, and that's part of being Catholic. We're supposed to have an argument with the church, and we're supposed to... and that's reflective of the rest of our lives, of the complexities and contradictions that we see and that we feel in things that are very important to us. You know, at the time of greatest love, there's greatest vulnerability. At the time of greatest loss, there's also a possibility for renewal. And so it kind of prepares us for life in general.
Did anything happen to you in the writing of this book, faith-wise, that you didn't expect?
Yes. It greatly deepened my sense of faith and my capacity to feel connected with God. And that was not what I expected, and it was a wonderful experience. One of the people I interviewed for the book is Kiki Kennedy. She was... born into a Jewish family and married my cousin Ted Kennedy Jr., who's Catholic, obviously, and she teaches psychiatry at Yale Medical School. And when she was about 45, in the height of the pedophile scandal, she converted to Catholicism. And she said, you know, when I wanted to be a good student, I studied hard. When I got married, I had to learn to be a partner with my husband, and I worked on that. When I had kids, I read every book I could about nurturing children, and I always took my faith for granted. I thought it would just be there. And I realized at a certain point that if I want my faith to be important to me and deep and rich in my life, I'm going to have to think about it and work on it. And so I think for people who read this book, they'll get a deeper sense of their faith and what it all means. And for me, certainly, that was part of the journey.
The book is Being Catholic Now. The author is our guest today, Kerry Kennedy. Kerry, it's been delightful talking with you, and thank you for being a part of this show on State of Belief.
Thank you.
Coming up on State of Belief, a pastor in Texas has some advice for his congregants. I'm sure he's warned parishioners in the past about coveting a neighbor's wife. But hey, he says there's nothing wrong with coveting your own. The surprising cure for the country's anxieties, courtesy of a megachurch preacher in Texas who says, have more. Have more what? I'll tell you when we come back. Please stay tuned. Again, friends, I'm Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief, and we're just about out of time today, but before we go, I promised you a good story, and I have got a good story for you. File this one away under News of the Weird from the World of Religion. Last Sunday, a pastor named Ed Young Jr. stood up in front of the congregation at Fellowship Church in Grapevine, Texas. Well, actually, he didn't really stand up. He was seated. In fact, he was seated on a bed. And the bed was key here because what the pastor was addressing is, in fact, a bedroom matter. Pastor Young instructed every married couple in his church to have sex. Yes, have sex once a day, at least every day, for a week. Sex, he said. Sex could silence a person's whining over the financial crisis or the debate over gay marriage or the general state of the world. Did you know that? I didn't know that. He said, it's time to turn that whining into whoopee and strengthen a couple of marriages along the way. Now, mind you, write this down. Don't stop here. This is sex only between a man and a woman married to each other. I could just imagine people in the congregation turning to each other and say, did he say what I thought he did? Yeah. He did. Great goodness, how evangelicals have changed. Well, when I was growing up in the Southern Baptist Convention, it was verboten. It was forbidden even to use the word sex. And now a leading evangelical advocate says sex is a therapy for anxiety fueled by the troubles of the world. This pastor may attract a whole new group of people into the evangelical tradition, not particularly because of the faith involved, but because of the new commandment, thou shalt have sex. And you know what? There's actually more. Because with typical patriarchal loyalty in this tradition, the message really is, thou shalt have sex with graciously submissive women. Remember, you heard it here on State of Belief. Do you have a bizarre or funny religion story you'd like to share with us? I bet you can't top that one. But try. Tell us the story if you have one. Go to our website, stateofbelief.com, and look for the Contact Us page. Share your thoughts about the show. And while you're there, consider making a contribution to the program. We do need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. And as always, I must remind you that State of Belief is brought to you by the Interfaith Alliance and its members. Help protect religious freedom in America by becoming a member, too. More information at interfaithalliance.org. Again, that's interfaithalliance.org. I hope you'll tune in next week while enjoying your Thanksgiving leftovers. And I'll be here with my thoughts on what I am thankful for this year. But until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.